Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Wall Street crises, huge ones, come and go and leave tracks. So do Supreme Courts. The next president of the United States might name three new justices to the High Court. Depending who does the naming, that could transform assumptions about life and death and rights in this country. This hour, On Point, imagining what a McCain court or Obama court would mean for America. You can join the conversation. Who do you want putting new judges on that bench, the highest bench, and why? We've put big legal thinkers on our bench this hour. With me in the studio is Lawrence Tribe, professor of constitutional law at Harvard. He's argued before the Supreme Court 35 times. He's out with a new book, The Invisible Constitution. Lawrence Tribe, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
From South Bend, Indiana, we're joined by Rick Garnett, professor at the University of Notre Dame Law School. He got a firsthand look at the inner workings of the Supreme Court when he clerked for Chief Justice William Rehnquist. Richard Garnett, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York, Jan Crawford Greenberg, legal affairs correspondent and Supreme Court watcher for ABC News. She's author of Supreme Conflict, the inside story of the struggle for control of the United States Supreme Court. Jan Crawford Greenberg, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Jan, I wish you'd take us through the basics first. We've got two great legal scholars here to look at the McCain Court and Obama Court. But remind us where the court stands right now and why the decisions of the next president, whoever that may be, are likely to be so consequential here.
Well, this is a court that's very narrowly divided on all those issues that you were just talking about when you kind of set this discussion up. We've got four solid liberal justices, four very solid conservative justices, and then we have this kind of man in the middle. I kind of think of him as the jump ball that everyone's struggling over for his vote, Anthony Kennedy. Mm. So the next president could really have a dramatic impact on the way this court goes on all those issues that mean so much to us in our everyday lives, whether it's at work or at home or how we conduct our business relationships, how we worship. On any number of issues, this is a court that is very much divided. It's a court that's very much in play in this election.
So you've got now, a 4-4 court right-left with the jump ball of Anthony Kennedy in the middle, and you've got a number of justices who are getting on in years, some who may certainly want to retire in the next four.
That's right. And five of the justices now are 70 or older. Justice John Paul Stevens is 88 years old. We all kind of think about Justice Stevens being, you know, one of the main ones who's likely to step down over the next 4 years. Justice Ginsburg, who's 75, another justice that we kind of look to and think she may be retiring. And then there's Justice Souter, who tells his friends he hates Washington, D.C., and he just wants to move back to New Hampshire and, you know, wrap himself in those whatever scratchy wool blankets and sit by his fire.
All three of these that you just named on the liberal wing.
Yeah. Right. They have that in common, liberal. So obviously, if you've got a President McCain replacing one of those or two of those or three of those, that would have a dramatic impact on the court and the way it approaches these issues for a generation. I mean, as you said, you know, presidents come and go, but the Supreme Court is really a president's most lasting legacy. George Bush, his nominations of John Roberts and Sam Alito will be shaping American law long after George Bush has left Washington, long after probably George Bush has left this earth. That's the impact a court nomination will have.
John Roberts, of course, Bush pick, Chief Justice, 53 years old. He could be there for a long time, maybe half a century. Sam Alito, 58 years old, a long time too. Now, Antonin Scalia, 72, so conceivably could be among those in the next 4 or 8 years who looks for some scratchy blankets of his own.
Yes, and Justice Kennedy's also 72. But, you know, we don't look to, and, you know, you never know. I mean, you never know who's going to step down or, you know, who might suffer an unfortunate illness, of course. But we right now are looking more at the liberals who we expect to be the next justices to go. But again, if a second term were to be on the horizon, then you've got all the conservatives in play. And that's Justice Kennedy and Justice Scalia being the two oldest of the conservatives on that bench.
All right. Let's turn to our legal scholars to begin to look at what they might hope for or perhaps fear from McCain Court or an Obama Court. Let me go first to Professor Garnett, Richard Garnett at Notre Dame. You were a clerk for Justice Rehnquist. You've got a conservative bent. You support John McCain, Professor Garnett. What do you hope for if John McCain gets several swings at bat here in nominating justices? What would you fear if it were an Obama in the White House instead?
Yeah, well, it's a hard act to follow. Obviously, Jan set things up very well. Should John McCain win, what I'd like to see and what I suspect a lot of people who share my view of the court would like to see are more nominees like Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito. I think even those who disagree with their philosophy would have to concede that they're very able, very gifted jurists. And I think, again, from someone who has my perspective, they have the correct philosophy about the role of the court, about how the Constitution should be interpreted, and so on. And as Jan said, there's a good chance that John McCain would get to replace two justices, in particular two justices who are probably more on the left side of the court, and that would make a difference on some things. Now, maybe just I'm kind of a inescapable wet blanket a little bit. I do think that it's possible to overstate not only the impact of the election, but also just the impact of the court in general. It's true the court is narrowly divided right now, 4-1-4, but that tends to be on these sort of hot-button, sexy issues. The court, on all kinds of issues relating to statutory interpretation and so on, is much less divided and certainly not divided on ideological grounds. I always like to remind people that it's not all 5-4 hot-button cases. The court agrees on a lot. And, of course, the reality, the political reality, is that even if Senator McCain wins, nobody thinks he's going to have a Republican Senate. And so there's no way around the fact that President McCain would have to work closely with Democrats in the Senate who would obviously be very concerned about permitting the court to move in what they regard as a conservative direction.
Rick Garnett, we'll come back and look at what you mean by correct philosophy for the court and, of course, hot-button issues, yes, and others as well, yes, maybe more like constitutional housekeeping. But, you know, those hot buttons are about basic freedoms and rights and powers, things people really get focused on. Lawrence Tribe, let's begin to get your perspective here as well. Hopes of an Obama court, who you support, what that might look like, fears if it's McCain's.
Well, I think if it's an Obama court, we would continue to have a court narrowly divided, with Justice Kennedy being what Jan Crawford Greenberg, I think, rightly described as kind of the jump ball in between.
Narrowly divided because conservatives are unlikely to be retiring.
Right.
Here.
I mean, Roberts, who was a student of mine not all that long ago, is 53 and is likely to be there for decades. So too Alito. And I would imagine that Justice Scalia is not going to reach for that scratchy blanket anytime soon. But it's Stevens, Ginsburg, perhaps Souter who are most likely to leave. And I think President Obama would replace them with people of somewhat similar leanings. So I don't think we'd expect any dramatic change on the court if Obama were elected president.
Kind of status quo in that he might be putting moderate liberal justices in behind departing moderate
That's
or liberal
right.
justices.
The court would remain closely divided, mm-hmm. and it would continue to protect certain basic human rights like habeas corpus by votes of 5-4. It would continue some degree of separation of church and state, again, by votes of 5-4. It would continue to protect various personal, intimate decisions by a closely divided vote. But if President McCain were elected, I think even with a Democratic Senate, we've seen what stealth candidates can do. And it is very clear that he would be pressured by his base to replace someone like Justice Stevens or Justice Ginsburg with someone much more like Justice Scalia or at least like Roberts or Alito. And what that would mean is a dramatic shift in really critical areas of American life.
Paint that picture for us. If it's a McCain White House and there's one or two or three justices in 4 or 8 years who leave the liberal wing of the bench, John McCain succeeds in having conservative or very conservative justices come in. What would the difference be materially?
I think to understand the difference, it would be important to drop the rather meaningless terms about conservative, because there'd be nothing conservative about the radical changes that a court with one more Justice Scalia would work. There are at least four areas where that would be true. It would be true with respect to personal decisions in the bedroom and in the emergency room. That is not only abortion, but a whole raft of personal areas of privacy with respect to birth, life, death, where the so-called conservatives on the court think that government has whatever powers a majority wishes to exercise.
This is Roe v. Wade, abortion, and right
abortion,
on down the life and death choice.
Right on down the line. I mean, even a case like the right of a grandmother to decide which grandkids to live with, the court upheld that against a local prosecution by a vote of 5-4.
This is Terry Schiavo and that kind of decision as well.
Really fundamental issues about how we live. Second, there'd be a lot more protection for the corporate boardroom with cutbacks on environmental protection, the Americans with Disability Act, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, the Food and Drug Act. These are areas where the court already has made significant inroads and where one more justice like Scalia would mean far less power for Congress to control the excesses of corporate decision making. Third, there would be a lot more power for the unilateral executive. It was a 5-4 vote by which the court held that those we put in a kind of legal black hole in Guantanamo are entitled to hearings on habeas corpus. And John McCain left no doubt. He said he thought that was one of the worst decisions in American history. When you think about Dred Scott and Plessy v. Ferguson and terrible decisions like that, it's an amazing thing for him to have said. For Barack Obama, that was one of the best decisions. Finally, separation of church and state. President Obama believes that religion has a place in American life, but he would, I think, appoint justices who recognize that freedom of religion and the rights of all of us depend partly on a wall of separation, very different from those that Justice Scalia and justices like him would end up doing.
A President McCain might go in a different direction. A President Palin, a different direction perhaps.
Right.
Again. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Election 08 and the Supreme Court, how a McCain court or an Obama court would change the court and change the country. I'm joined by Lawrence Tribe, professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School, author of the new book, The Invisible Constitution. Richard Garnett is with us, professor of law at the University of Notre Dame, former clerk for Chief Justice William Rehnquist. He blows for the National Review's online Bench Memos. Jan Crawford Greenberg is with us as well, covers the Supreme Court for ABC News, former longtime legal affairs reporter for the Chicago Tribune, author of Supreme Conflict. Let's listen to the candidates just for a moment. Big speech May 6th at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, by Senator John McCain, reiterating there his conservative credentials when he talked about the kind of judges he would appoint to the Supreme Court.
I will look for people in the cast of John Roberts, Samuel Alito, and my friend, the late William Rehnquist, jurists of the highest caliber who know their own minds and know the law and know the difference. My nominees will understand that there are clear limits to the scope of judicial power and clear limits to the scope of federal power.
Barack Obama, August 15th, thinking about power and limits of power of a different kind at the Saddleback Summit with Pastor Rick Warren. Obama said he would not have nominated Antonin Scalia and stood by his vote against Chief Justice John Roberts. Roberts, he thinks, has given the executive branch, he said, too much power.
One of the most important jobs of, I believe, the Supreme Court is to guard against the encroachment of the executive branch on the other, the power of the other branches.
Okay.
And I think that he has been a little bit too willing and eager to give a administration, whether it's mine or George Bush's, more power than I think the Constitution originally intended.
Barack Obama with Pastor Rick Warren. Jan Crawford Greenberg, you heard Lawrence Tribe and Richard Garnett give their sort of broad stroke portrait of what's at stake here. Richard Garnett saying, look, it's not all hot button issues. It might not, you know, not everything is that big a deal. But it feels as though there are huge stakes. I mean, talking with Republicans at the Republican convention in St. Paul, they are very, very hungry for a major swing in not just the decisions, but the very role of the Supreme Court.
Well, that's exactly right. And when you listen to the candidates, you know, it's all a lot of code. But basically what it means at the end of the day is that conservatives like John Roberts and Sam Alito and Antonin Scalia think the court should be less involved in some of these hot-button social issues and that the government's, the will of the majority, should be able to step in to decide some of that, whether it's abortion, affirmative action, any number of those hot-button social issues.
That is, give it to the legislatures.
Right. And liberals see a more active role, an evolving role for the courts to step in and protect the majority from the will of the minority from the will of that majority. So they're very distinct. And you see that up at the court right now. I mean, these very distinct, different views on the way to interpret the Constitution and what that means for American life and how courts are going to look at it and how legislatures are going to have to get involved. So right now, I mean, this is a court that's diametrically opposed on how to even look at what the role of the court should be and what the justices should actually be doing. So if McCain, as Rick said, I mean, if McCain were to get one or two of these nominations, that would move the court quite sharply to the right. Now, conservatives for decades, and I talk about this in my book, have been greatly frustrated by the inability to turn the court to the right, away from some of the more liberal rulings of the Warren Court and those precedents of that era. You know, and they've kind of come short of their goals. The Rehnquist Court was a court that had seven justices nominated by Republican presidents, but on all of those hot-button issues, it tended to go to the left on a more liberal route. George Bush started turning the court back to the right with his nominations of Roberts and Alito, and really it's just going to take one more justice, possibly two, even with the Democratic Senate, to complete that turn.
Rick Garnett, Lawrence Tribe says on bedroom, boardroom, Oval Office, church and state, he would anticipate major changes, profound swing if we get another conservative vote on that court. Again, at the Republican convention, I heard many Republicans absolutely kind of starving and hungry for that to happen and smelling that it could happen soon. You don't see that kind of swing if John McCain would have one or two or three picks on this court?
Well, obviously, with all due respect to Professor Tribe, who's a great scholar, I just think he misstates and overstates in some places quite dramatically what the court has been doing and what McCain justices would do. It's important to understand what a, quote, shift to the right means when it comes to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, at least in theory, doesn't legislate or make abortion laws. It decides whether the laws that we, the people, enact are constitutionally permissible. Now, a case like Roe versus Wade is objected to by conservatives, not because we think the Constitution forbids a state to permit abortion. It's because we think that the Constitution guarantees the right of we the people to decide for ourselves what the precise menu of abortion regulation should be. Someone in Professor Tribe's position or Senator Obama's position thinks that on a question like that, the issue should be removed from the legislative process and taken over entirely by unelected judges.
It sounds like you're minimizing that change, but that sounds to me like an epical change. We went through era in the 20th century where exactly that kind of change is what the Supreme Court drove.
Well, again, if I could finish, there are obviously some questions that the Constitution itself clearly removes from the legislative process. We don't let the Congress just decide to impose cruel and unusual punishments. We're all committed to freedom of religion. Despite what Larry Tribe said, there's zero prospect that conservative justices want to obliterate the separation of church and state. But on the question of abortion, to which the Constitution does not speak, conservatives believe that it's a grave mistake and it's a fundamentally undemocratic move to say to we the people that on a question that's this morally charged, that nine unelected justices ought to decide the matter rather than we the people through compromise, debate, dialogue. In every state in the union, if Roe were overturned, there would be a debate, and I predict anyway that, and I say this as someone who's pro-life and would like to see abortion more closely regulated, we'd see compromises. It is not going to be the case, and Professor Tribe knows it's not going to be the case, that abortion is going to be outlawed across the country if Roe versus Wade is overturned.
Larry Tribe, you're overstating the shift that could take place with a McCain court?
I don't think so. I think it's possible to caricature my views so that they sound like overstatements. I haven't said that abortion would be outlawed everywhere, but I have said that the current view, which protects a right that is spoken of in the Constitution, liberty, the woman's liberty, and protects it from majorities, would be significantly diluted, and diluted deliberately by people who want the government to have more power over a woman's body and what she does with it. But I think it's a completely misguided view to caricature this in terms of Professor Garnett being for we the people and liberals being in favor of all decisions being made by mm-hmm. nine justices. It's a question of balance. And in fact, the supposedly conservative court, the court that I think is better described as a right-leaning court than conservative, does not generally leave to we the people all kinds of things. This court, the conservative court that we now have, has invalidated more acts of Congress per year than all of its predecessors combined. It's invalidated important parts of the Violence Against Women Act, of the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, of the Americans with Disability Act. It has, in fact, said that when the people of Louisville or Seattle decide to take race into account in a modest way in order to achieve greater integration of the schools, that choice is foreclosed to them, even though the Equal Protection Clause of the mm-hmm. Constitution says nothing about being completely blind to race. It's as foreclosed as segregation was in Brown v. Board. It is a court that is quite interventionist and would be even more so under a court with more Scalia's. It's a question of which direction the court intervenes in. We are long past the day when the court occupies a complete back seat in decisions about the shape of the country. It sets the boundaries, and the boundaries would be set quite differently by an Obama and a McCain court.
Let's begin to hear from our listeners, if we may. Bruce in Brantford, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
And I think everybody made most of the points to be made here, but I think that this really discussion underscores the incredible importance in a way that most people don't think about of this election. You know, it's one thing, thank God that John Paul Stevens, and I guess I give away my leanings here, has survived George Bush's administration. That's what I was most worried about when Bush got elected and reelected. But he's 88, and, you know, it's one thing to replace Rehnquist and O'Connor with Alito and Roberts, but if McCain is elected, and who knows, he's 72 years old, I can't think of another presidential candidate who might be foremost in people's minds that he might not survive, you know, given health issues. Mm-hmm. Then we'd have Palin and her ideology. So, you know, it's one thing to replace Rehnquist and O'Connor, but if Stevens went and McCain or Palin replaced him, that one appointment in and of itself would shift everything. And then you have Ginsburg and Souter thrown in there. Say goodbye to any legal abortions and many of those other issues that your guests earlier enumerated.
High stakes. Bruce, thanks for your call. Let me get one more from Queensbury, New York. Carol, you're on the air.
I think that the election this year is more important because I believe the Supreme Court is even more important than the presidency. It's very important for this country to have a balanced Supreme Court. What we have now is 4-1-4, or the possible retirement of three justices and a Republican president. We're apt to lean 6-3. We've just leaned too far to the right. I just think that it's extremely important because these justices are there long after the president is gone.
Carol, thanks very much. Jan Crawford Greenberg, it's been pointed out by Richard Garnett and Lawrence Tribe, with a McCain presidency, you would still probably have a Democratic Senate, maybe a more Democratic Senate. Would that put a real break on John McCain's options here? They have to confirm. After all, you know, could he necessarily put someone on the bench who would fulfill the dreams of many on the right when it comes to the court?
Well, there's no question that the Democrats, in knowing the stakes, you know, with this nomination, are going to make it a tremendous battle. And it will be very difficult for him to get someone who's openly conservative confirmed. But, you know, that said, I mean, it's, you know, he could do any number of things. I mean, he could nominate an openly ardent conservative, knowing that their nomination may go down or hoping that it may not. And if it does, be prepared to move on to Plan B. He could try to nominate someone who is not perceived as completely conservative, the stealth nominee that we were talking about earlier, although, of course, that has its risks, mm-hmm. as President H.W. Bush learned with David Souter.
Right.
So, you know, he has a lot of things that he could think about. I mean, at the end of the day, though, I mean, John McCain would be putting a conservative on that Supreme Court. The question is going to be how conservative, because the Democrats are going to have to confirm someone.
There's been talk of Orrin Hatch or John Cornyn, potentially, colleagues of his for a long time in the Senate, maybe in that stealth category. I don't know, Jen.
I don't think the next nomination is going to be a white man. I think that you're going to see, whether it's McCain or Obama, you're going to see the president putting either a woman or a minority on that court. This is a court of, you know, one woman. Justice O'Connor told me once she never thought she'd see the day when the Supreme Court returned to just having one woman, you know, on the bench. So I think our next nomination is going to be a diversity nomination. I think it would be, therefore, unlikely that it's going to be someone coming out of the Senate, maybe the second nomination. But I would guess the next one is probably going to be a woman. If it's McCain, it could be someone, you know, in Washington, a lawyer, an appellate lawyer that, you know, is not as prominent, hasn't written a whole bunch of judicial opinions that the Senate can pick over.
Rick Garnett, Lawrence Tribe suggests that a conservative court, if McCain were to turn it that way, might be as active in right-wing terms as interventionists from the right as, you know, the court in the late 20th century was perceived by many from the left. What do you say to that?
Well, I think Professor Tribe and I probably agree that words like activist and judicial restraint are not always very helpful. For me, a crucial distinction, if we're trying to think about whether we approve or disapprove of intervention, is whether the decision in question tries to answer a substantive moral question, or whether it's simply I shouldn't say simply, it's very important, or whether it's policing the structural boundaries of our Constitution. So just to give an example, there's a case 13 years ago or so called Lopez, in which the court struck down a gun regulation. Mm-hmm. Now, it did so because on the theory that the regulation went beyond Congress's Commerce Clause power. In my view, that kind of intervention is less troubling because it doesn't preclude local governments from reaching the same policy choice. It just says it's beyond Congress's power to enact. What's more troubling to me, though, would be a decision, again, like Roe versus Wade, which says which purports to answer and thereby to remove entirely from the political arena a moral question, a substantive moral question. So again, Professor Tribe and I are going to agree that words like activism need more explaining. I think intervention is often appropriate, and I'm sure Professor Tribe thinks intervention is often appropriate. It's just, in my view, the court should try to avoid answering questions that, in my view, the Constitution gives to we the people. Instead, it should police the structural boundaries of the Constitution, like separation of powers, like federalism, and so on.
Larry Tribe?
Well, of course, those structural boundaries include the boundary between government power and personal decision-making. And one man's moral question is another man's definition of liberty. When the Supreme Court decides that a woman's personal liberty includes some autonomy with respect to whether she will incubate a new life and bring a new child into the world, that's an interpretation of the word liberty in the Constitution. I certainly agree that decisions like Lopez involving a structural restriction on who can control possession of guns is an appropriate decision for the court to make. But I think Rick and I might also both agree that a decision like Heller, the recent decision of the Supreme Court, saying that the federal government cannot completely disarm the populace, that because the Second Amendment protects a different kind of liberty, the liberty of bearing arms, that too is an appropriate kind of decision, though we may disagree with exactly how far it went. None of these decisions take matters entirely out of the hands of popular assemblies. What they do is establish boundaries in the name of important constitutional principles. Most of those principles, as I argue in my book, The Invisible Constitution, are not exactly written down. The structural principles about the separation of federal and state power, as well as the structural principles about the boundaries between individual autonomy and family life on the one hand and government power on the other. They're implicit in the Constitution. They're tacit postulates, but they're no less important than the things that are very specifically written down.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Election 08 and the Supreme Court, how a McCain court or an Obama court would change and change the country. And again, we're joined by Professor Richard Garnett from Notre Dame, Larry Tribe, Lawrence Tribe of Harvard, author of the new book, The Invisible Constitution, and Jan Crawford Greenberg with us from New York and ABC News. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court ruled in June that Guantanamo prisoners have the right to challenge their detention in American federal courts. Obama supported the ruling. McCain here condemned it.
These are enemy combatants. These are people who are not citizens. They do not and never have been given the rights that citizens of this country have. And my friends, there are some bad people down there. There are some bad people.
August 15th, again, the Saddleback Summit. Pastor Rick Warren asked Barack Obama which of the current Supreme Court justices he would not have nominated.
I would not have nominated Clarence Thomas. I don't think that he... I don't think that he was a strong enough jurist or legal thinker at the time for that elevation.
And Rick Warren asked John McCain who he would not have nominated to the high court.
With all due respect, Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer, Justice Souter, and Justice Stevens.
Why? Tell me why.
Well, I think that the President of the United States has incredible responsibility in nominating people to the United States Supreme Court. They are lifetime positions, as well as the federal bench. There will be two or maybe three vacancies. This nomination should be based on the criteria of proven record of strictly adhering to the Constitution of the United States of America and not legislating from the bench. Some of the worst damage has been done by legislating from the bench.
Jan Crawford Greenberg, there's John McCain saying he would not have nominated Ginsburg, Breyer, Souter, Stevens. That's quite a list. I can imagine some listeners thinking, can't we, you know, the Rodney King line, can't we all get along? Is there not a middle ground? I mean, is it none of these or none of those? Is it that black and white all over, Jan?
No, of course not. And, of course, you know, John McCain absolutely agrees with a lot of the rulings that the four that he just ticked off would hand down, including,
but he says he wouldn't have nominated them.
But, you know, he can thank those justices for, you know, signing off on his kind of pet legislation, campaign finance reform. So, you know, it's a mistake to think about it. And as I think as Rick pointed out, a lot of these cases aren't 5-4. Professor Tribe pointed out, a lot of these cases, you know, are and deeply divide the justices. But it's, you know, so of course you can't look at it like, you know, either or. But John McCain is going to be trying to nominate justices, as he said, like John Roberts and Sam Alito. They have a very different view than the four liberals that he just ticked off. Barack Obama says he would not have nominated Clarence Thomas. I thought that was curious that, you know, he points to Thomas not having enough experience as a jurist. I think the one criticism that most people agree on with this court, which is a fine court of nine, I think, very capable justices, is that they're too much from the ivory tower, that we don't have anyone from kind of the real world, someone who's been a lawyer in the trenches or a prosecutor. These are all former appeals court judges. And I would not expect Obama to necessarily try to put another appeals court judge on the court.
Let's go to Mark in Lenox, Massachusetts. Mark, what do you see with the court and the future?
Well, I see McCain choosing the right partner in Sarah Palin in support of anti-abortion applications, and I look forward to that. Here in Massachusetts, obviously, if Romney had chosen an anti-abortion person, we would appreciate that as well. Back in those days, Kerry was here, and I didn't necessarily support that bill. But,
so you imagine with a McCain court, Roe v. Wade overturned, Mark?
Yes, that most definitely.
And as a conservative, if that's how you see yourself, what about other issues of personal freedom, liberty, detention, habeas corpus, and the rest? Are you worried that the same justices who overturned Roe v. Wade might take away other rights that have come to be understood in the Constitution?
Not at all, because I think this is more of a moral issue rather than a political issue, and it's unfortunate that it has gone over to a political side, as Roe v. Wade might have been declared, but if we keep it on a basic level, I think the freedoms are still there, and it separates this out from other freedoms.
Mark, thanks very much for your call. Let's get one from San Diego, California, and AJ. AJ, you're on the air.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. I think a political generation ago, the question, plainly put, was, it's the economy, stupid. And today, among the so-called base of the Republican Party, the true believers, it's the courts, stupid. They see the possibility of taking control of the courts for a generation and beyond. This is their shining opportunity to do this. And by the way, I disagree with at least one of your guests, because the so-called conservatives really are not conservative. They're actually reactionary, if we're going to use the proper terms, in their political views, are not about expansion in any terms. They are restrictive. You may not choose this. You may not choose that. Your reproductive destiny is not yours to choose. How you may wish to live a domestic life with the person of your choice is not your choice to make. Protecting the environment? No. We will not allow you to put these protections in place. Thanks for taking my call. I'll take the comments off air.
AJ, thanks very much for your call. Richard Garnett, you've got Mark in Lenox, who says, bravo, bring on the McCain court. Roe v. Wade and abortion are what it's all about for him. AJ, warning from California, he doesn't see it as a conservative court that would emerge, but as a reactionary, intrusive court when it comes to personal freedoms and government action. What do you say to that?
Well, I think we're all on this program and across the country committed to the idea that our Constitution protects basic freedoms, and we all treasure them. So I guess I have to disagree with AJ's suggestion that we have a bunch of reactionaries bent on taking them away. With respect to the first caller, you know, it is true that a lot of people in the base of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party think that courts matter a lot. For a lot of conservatives, their concern is that the court has, as I suggested earlier, sort of stood in the way of certain legislation that conservatives would like to enact. Many liberals, I think, have long thought that the courts were a way to secure some policy outcomes that just couldn't be gained through the legislature. So I don't want to be heard to suggest that courts don't matter. I do want to be heard to suggest that perhaps they don't matter as much as we sometimes think they do. You played a clip a little bit before about the Gitmo case, and I think it's really revealing. So Senator McCain was objecting to that decision as an overreach by the court and, in a sense, as a kind of activism, whereas Barack Obama has suggested that that decision was an appropriate way of reining in executive power. What to me is interesting about that case, though, it wasn't the storyline isn't court reining in the executive. At least that's not the entire story. In the recent case, the court was substituting its judgment for the combined judgment of the executive and the legislature. So I think what makes that this Boumediene case particularly troubling to some conservatives is that the court seemed to take a dramatically expanded view of its own power to second-guess not just the president, which I think we all believe that the court has to do sometimes. The court does have to check executive power sometimes. But in the foreign affairs arena, when you have the court and Congress – I'm sorry, when you have the president and Congress speaking together, it's quite a thing for the court to just substitute its own judgment for that. So I think that's why Senator McCain was upset, not because he opposes basic freedoms like habeas, but because you had the court second-guessing the combined decision of Congress and the president.
Lawrence Tribe, speak to this case and to the larger issue of basic freedoms and the court as seen by these wings.
It seems to me very important in a case like that, even though it involves only a handful of people in Guantanamo, it represents the essence of what America is all about. When John McCain says, and I'm quoting him, "These are enemy combatants. There's some bad people down there," he profoundly misunderstands the whole nature of law, and I wouldn't trust the kinds of people he would put on the court. We don't know that these are enemy combatants. That's what they were claiming a right to have some kind of hearing about. Lots of people just get picked up and thrown in a black hole, and the only question is, even when Congress decides that that black hole should remain shut, do we owe ourselves and the world, for whom the power of our example is stronger than the example of our power, some fidelity to basic principles, one of which is that you don't suspend habeas corpus in the absence of circumstances that no one claimed were present here, but in fact you provide some meaningful hearing to see if you've made a mistake, if you've got the wrong guy. And it seems to me that to think that it is legislative activism to affirm the basic core centuries-old principle of habeas corpus is to get everything upside down.
But Rick Garnett says we all agree here that basic freedoms must be protected.
We don't. Well, John McCain didn't agree in the Boumediene case. It was an opinion written for five justices by a Reagan appointee, Anthony Kennedy. And the dissenting justices are the ones whose ranks of four John McCain wants to swell to five, six, or seven. If that happened, even the most basic right, the right to have somebody decide whether you don't belong in indefinite detention, would be gone. And that would represent an accretion of power for government, for the Congress and the president, which is antithetical to the most fundamental core principles of liberty in our republic.
Jan, this goes to principles. It also comes back to role. I mean, I think many Americans have simply become accustomed to the court or the legacy of courts that were kind of riding the brake on a majoritarian view of the world. Might we swing to that with the McCain court, that the court would just be a different entity? It would understand its role, its job very differently, and all this would get slugged out with whoever's got the majority in the legislature. That's a different kind of country than most Americans have grown up in.
Well, that's absolutely right, and certainly that is where conservatives believe that these debates should be fought. And, you know, and because the courts are always stepping in, they would say, the legislators can shirk their responsibility for deciding these very hard, critical issues of our day. But you're absolutely right. People, you know, growing up in this day and age can't imagine a time when the court would say states could ban abortion if they chose to do it. And if I could go back to our last two callers, you know, I think what we need to all keep in mind, though, is that it's not so easy. When we're talking about whether it's abortion or any of these hot-button issues, it's not so easy to predict how a justice is going to rule. We don't know how John Roberts, we don't know how Sam Alito would rule on whether Roe versus Wade should be overturned. Right now, there are two justices on that court, Justice Thomas and Justice Scalia, who would overturn Roe, and they've already said they would do that. But other justices have surprised or disappointed conservative presidents who've nominated them. Two of the three justices President Reagan put on that court refused to overturn Roe when they had the chance. One of President Bush, the dad's two justices, refused to overturn Roe versus Wade. So even if John McCain were to go in the White House and make that nomination, we can't predict with a complete certainty what those justices are going to do.
Larry Tribe, you're shaking your head there. A mystery around these votes on these justices,
I think,
on Roe v. Wade?
With all respect, I really think Jan is terrific, but I think she's being a little naive. I knew perfectly well from the records of both Kennedy and Souter, though they were Republican appointees, that they would not be the kinds of justices who would turn back the clock on Roe v. Wade. And I'm quite confident from the records of my former student John Roberts and of Sam Alito that whether they would call it an overruling of Roe v. Wade or whether they would simply chip away at it till there was nothing left, that's exactly where they would be headed, and they would have no hesitation at doing it.
How is that any different than what Justice Kennedy has done? I mean, you could say, Justice Kennedy has also chipped away and chipped
really,
away, although refusing
really.
To overturn.
He was part of the critical plurality in 1992 in Planned Parenthood of Pennsylvania versus Casey that reaffirmed the center of Roe v. Wade, and I don't regard that as significantly chipping away.
He was part of the majority that allowed the federal government to ban for the first time ever a specific abortion procedure.
Right. So very late,
you know,
he's
very knocking late legs
abortion.
Out from under the table, but refusing to overturn it
I think
outright.
That's right.
And
but
we don't know if Roberts or Alito would also refuse. They may ship away as well.
Larry Tribe, let me ask you about another of your former students, Barack Obama himself, who of course was at Harvard Law School. Do you, if it were an Obama presidency, do you imagine him putting up liberal justices in the mold of the court's most liberal justices now? Something more moderate? What would you expect?
I think he would appoint justices very much like Breyer and Ginsburg, who I regard as moderately liberal. He has said he admired Earl Warren. He would probably look for people whose experience in life gave them a sense of what the law meant to real people and not simply what it meant as words on paper. Certainly he would appoint brilliant people who had a deep understanding of the Constitution, as he has himself. He was probably my most remarkable student in the 7,500 or so that I've taught in nearly 40 years at Harvard. And this isn't just a recent view on my part. I've been saying it for years. He's an amazing guy, and he knows amazing minds when he sees them. But he's also interested in people who are compassionate and who understand that the law is not simply a laundry list of rights. It's a living document.
Rick Garnett, I wish you'd just come back to the picture of the United States. If it's McCain, and maybe Palin after McCain, if the conservative voters and executive had their way or something like it, how do you picture this country being different, let's say, 20 years from now?
Oh, that's a big question. I don't picture it being dramatically different if Senator McCain is elected and several new justices are appointed. I mean, again,
I don't understand. I mean, there's such a hunger to have it change and to have it change in a big way, and then you say it wouldn't be different. Change for no change?
Well, you're asking me what my view is, and it's not necessarily my responsibility to defend everybody else's view, but my view is that on a lot of these matters that that Professor Tribe is very eloquently advocating for Senator Obama on, that in fact they would be hashed out in the legislatures, and we would see compromises enacted, as is always the case in politics, and that the freedoms that the American people cherish would be protected through that process. We would not see the obliteration of the separation of church and state, because Americans understand that that's important to religious freedom, just like Americans understand that religion has a place in the public square. We would not see the across-the-board outlawing of abortion, because most very few Americans want the across-the-board outlawing, but we would permit some reasonable regulations of the process, which is what most Americans want. Now, Professor Tribe talks about the kind of justices that Senator Obama would pick as having sort of compassion and insight into the experiences of real people, and certainly that matters, but I guess I'm more drawn to Senator McCain's statement that it's really important that a judge, a federal judge who's not elected, understand his or her role as, to the extent it's possible, as interpreting the law and not making it. Now, I know that's kind of a cliche, and I say that with some hesitation, but it is not the job of a federal judge to try to imagine what it feels like to be one of the parties. It's the job of the federal judge to try to interpret the law that's given to him or her by Congress or in the Constitution.
Larry Tribe, 10 seconds.
Well, interpreting the law separate from life is not only a cliche, it's a meaningless aspiration. I think that one needs law to be responsive to life, and that's what an Obama court would do.
Lawrence Tribe of Harvard Law School, Richard Garnett of the University of Notre Dame, and Jan Crawford Greenberg, ABC News. Thanks to all of you for being with us. Views there of an ex-Supreme Court. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.